I believe if you don't make a big investment, it's a waste of your time, because I've seen people buy $100 courses here that had a ton of value, $50, you know, and they don't even show up. Even the stuff that's $100, you still have to do the work. And that's, I think, where a lot of people, you know, if they're willing to step up and go, you know what, I am pretty good, but I want to be way better. And I'm willing to spend the money on myself to get better. I still spend the money on myself to get better.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am so excited to introduce our guest for the day, Edna Keep. Edna, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's my absolute pleasure.
Yeah, well, you have an incredible story and I know the listeners are going to love it. So let's get into it. Edna Keep's journey from single mom, age 16. It started when she was 16 as a single mom, living in subsidized housing with a daughter in subsidized daycare, to now being a multimillionaire real estate entrepreneur and coach that inspires others. So she is also a syndicator, long-term buy and hold rental apartment buildings. And her claim to fame is a $75 million real estate portfolio built with other people's money. So really excited to get into your story. And let's just start right there at age 16. Tell us about, you know, where you were and how you got into real estate.
Sure. Well, you know, it was quite a bit later in life I actually got into real estate, but I always kind of start at the age 16 thing because I think that was a real catalyst for me to change. A lot of people, you know, felt I really limited my life by getting myself into a situation like that at 16. There was no going to university. It was straight into the workforce, like different stuff like that. But I realize now that it's probably one of the best things that could ever happen to me because, you know, you start overcoming adversity like that at a young age and it just forces you to get stronger. One of my favorite mentors over the years has been Jim Rohn. And he has a quote that I absolutely love and repeat again and again. And it's, don't wish life were easier, wish you were better. And that I just love that. And the other one he says is, you know, if you can make a living from your job, but you make your fortune from working on yourself. Mm. And so I adopted that philosophy and I started spending more time working on myself than I did any of my work, reading, you know, self-help books, taking courses, hiring coaches. And, you know, it just went exponentially from there. My first real success was working as a financial advisor. And I did that for 15 years, but you know what, there was no real passion there. It was one of those things, you know, you say, yourself up and it's about the money. And it wasn't until I got into real estate that I really found what I like to do. So much so, Suja, that I actually sold my financial planning practice because I couldn't sell mutual funds anymore. It was like, wow, once I understood real estate, I was like, no, can't do that anymore. So,
oh, totally.
So in our first 18 months we took our real estate training classes to the Robert Kiyosaki Group. In our first 18 months, we owned 50 doors. And I think our cash flow was around $5,000 a month. We increased our net worth like $800,000. It was amazing, like what we were able to accomplish in a short period of time. And that was what made me decide to focus on real estate.
Wow, that's very exciting. Yeah, I mean, there's so much there and I want to get into all of it. The thing I want to circle back to is, you know, what got you into all this personal development, Jim Rohn stuff? You know, was it because people were saying, oh, your life is limited, or what was it that made you want to start looking into personal development?
You know, the biggest thing was, people started telling me I had to learn to live within my means. When I was young, maybe 21, I remember I had a credit card debt was about $2,000. Now that was a big debt for somebody who was earning $1,200 a month, just to give you an idea. But I started having people tell me, Edna, you have to learn to live within your means. And I'm thinking, shit, if I got to learn something, I think I want to learn how to be rich. I don't want to learn how to live within my means. Like, how limiting. And, you know, I got a lot of crap for trying to think like that. Got pushed down, held down, pushed back. Like, who are you to think, you know? But, you know, at one point in my life, I just decided I'm not going to listen to anybody who has not accomplished what I want to accomplish. And I stopped listening to all the naysayers, and I started hanging around with people who, you know, could always see a next level of getting better, a next level of getting better. And that was the biggest catalyst, Suja. Like, just saying, you know, I want to learn how to be rich. I don't want to learn how to live within my means. What a stupid goal. Stupid goal, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, okay, that's so amazing. I think that's so funny because, I mean, well, I love it, first of all. Like, you were inherently, seemingly not willing to be wanting to be limited. Like, if you want to have a kid at 16, you were going to have a kid at 16. If you wanted to not live within your means, you were going to, I mean, it was just interesting. It seems like you weren't listening to these messages that society was like telling you. Would you say that's true?
Yes. And you know, later on, when I started working with Robert Kiyosaki, one of my favorite books, and if you haven't read this, and if your listeners haven't, I highly recommend it, was a book called Why Do A Students Work for C Students and C Students or B Students Work for the Government? I was a C student, Suja. So I wasn't even like, I wasn't a, you know, great candidate for university in the first place. But everything that was pointed out to me as me being the wrong way of being throughout school is the exact same stuff that allowed me to be successful as an entrepreneur. And reading that book was huge for me because all of a sudden it was like, you know, in school, if you're a C student, you're like, oh, who are you? And da, da, da. The A students are the like be all and end all and the athletes and stuff like that. And I was none of that. And in that book, it said, the reason you're having success as an entrepreneur is because you were none of that. You're not an A student because they think in a different way than you think. And I went, wow, that is so true. So to be celebrated your C student status your whole life, to be celebrated that that's a strength. People like Richard Branson and many of these multi-millionaire and billionaires were C students in school. It really opened my eyes to the possibility at that time too.
Yeah, for sure. I think I fall into the category of a reformed A student because I was definitely that A student. And I, you know, at some point realized in life that that wasn't going to get me to where I wanted to be, right? Like maybe that was going to get me a quote, good career at like,
good job. Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely had to like break the habits of being an A student, which, you know, happened multiple times. But anyways, I love that so much. You know, just love the spirit that you are coming with. So, okay. So can I just ask like what decade it was when you first started with Robert Kiyosaki and buying real estate?
We took our courses with Robert Kiyosaki in 2007.
Okay. And were you in Canada at that point?
Yep. Yeah. In Canada. But you know, they had a whole team of people that came to Canada and they'd Canadianized some of the content, not all of it. We had to, you know, Canadianize a lot of our own. But the concepts were pretty much the same, you know, and they kind of taught a real general, you know, understanding of real estate, starting with single family homes. And then, of course, if you like it, then you can build it up. But they had like wholesaling and lease options and land development and property management and asset. And they had everything under the sun. So we picked our few that we liked. One was creative financing and the commercial, which was what got us into apartment buildings. And we kind of focused on those two right there that really made the change for us.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And when you say we, did you have like a business partner? Was it your partner or?
My husband now. So we got married in, I was a single mom, like I said, and then we got married in 2000 and I have two more daughters. And so him and I were the ones that took all the courses and stuff together. Yeah.
Okay. That's great. It's so great that you were aligned and had a common vision for that going forward. And then, okay. So you also told a pretty amazing story about how you were able to achieve some really quick success in Canada, 50 doors and $5,000 a month in passive income. Cause that's $100 a door, right?
Roughly.
Yes. Okay. So how did you do that so quickly?
Well, you know, we started like everyone in single family. I think our very first two purchases were condos because that was the least amount of work that we had to do. And then we got a few houses and then we ran out of our ability to get mortgages. So we started partnering with other people where they could get the mortgage and stuff. And then I remember I was sitting down with a realtor one time and I said, yeah, we want to buy 20 more houses this year because we bought 20 by then. And he said, Edna, why don't you just buy a multifamily? And I said, oh, I don't have enough houses yet. And he says, well, how many houses do you think you need? And I go, well, I don't know. And he said, no, he says, you could buy a multifamily. And so we started talking about it and I asked a few questions. And before I left his office that day, I said, well, do you have one that's for sale? He says, as a matter of fact, I do. I'm just writing up a listing for a 24-unit apartment building. And I said, well, okay, well, what would it take to get that under contract? And just the way that our market was right then, he said, you know what, it's going to take a full price offer. These guys have owned this building for like 30 years, he said, and they kind of, you know, want to sell out at this point and retire and everything else. So I said, okay, write it up. And I made the full price offer on the building before I left his office that day. It was accepted a couple of days later. And that was our 21st 24-unit apartment building. And we had had 26 units by the time we took possession of it. So that brought us to the 50 doors. And that's actually what it took us into multifamily after that. Because it was like, you know what? That was no harder than buying a single house, you know, a little bit different process. But once we understood the process, it was really no different. We were already raising capital for the single family homes and the duplexes so cool. and fourplexes and stuff. So it was just a natural transition into the multifamily.
That's so cool. I mean, you had set yourself up so well with already kind of being able to raise capital. And like, you know, like you said, it wasn't really even much harder than doing just one single family deal. So, And so you just knew that you were going to be able to bring the money to the table because you'd already been raising capital. Is that right?
And well, at that point, I was still a financial advisor. So other than a few close family members and close friends, my partner actually raised most of the capital for that deal. So I found the deal, got under contract. And what we had partnered with this other couple who had taken the same training we did about 2 years prior to us. And they'd already bought a few houses. So they really opened our eyes to what was out there. So when we got that building under contract, I approached them and I said, and they also had their own property management firm by that time. And I said, hey, if we got a 24 unit under contract, would you guys be our partners? And they said, yeah. So they helped us with the whole thing.
Okay, awesome. Really love it. And who did you get to sign on the loan that time?
It was us and them that signed on the loan that time. Yeah. We had raised the money. And in that particular case, because of what we were doing, we were condo converting that property. We brought in most of the capital, just paying a straight out interest rate on it.
Okay. Really, really. So yeah. So you had private debt basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Awesome. Well, that's really fascinating. You've been so in that 6 months, you had also acquired all 26 of those single family homes. Is that right?
In the 18 months. Yeah.
Oh, it was in 18 months. Okay, cool.
In the 18 months from start to the 50 doors was 18 months. And we'd acquired a bunch of houses and condos and stuff like that in the meantime.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's awesome. I would be curious to know, you know, I'm not sure how much you can speak to this, but the difference between Canadian real estate and US real estate, like when you say they Canadianize the concepts, like what is different?
You know what? We actually just bought 260 doors in Memphis, Tennessee. So I can really speak to that like firsthand. Back when we started, we actually wanted to start in the US, like not right in 07 when we started, but in 08, 09, when the market corrected in the US, we wanted to move into the US and we spent a lot of time training and trying to figure it out. But you know, with the market such bad position, the only way you could buy properties was if you were buying with cash. And that didn't work for us because we were looking at leveraging quite a bit. So we ended up as buying most of our properties right in our home province at that time, just again, because of what was happening in the markets. US was in the tank and we were on an upward swing. We had just as an example, when we started in 07, we had owned our home for 5 years and it almost doubled in value in our area too. So to give you an idea of how undervalued our market was at that time. So even from 2007, the market still was increasing. The first two purchases we made, we were able to refi them out in a year and pull all of our own cash out of it. And then the third property we bought was with investor capital because we learned that if we weren't going to do that, we weren't going to be able to scale. So we did start in the US. Now, what we've learned there is there's just a little bit different criteria for financing. We have total recourse loans. Like when we sign a loan, everybody's responsible for mortgage and that sort of thing. And in the US, you guys have something called non-recourse loan, whereas when you're borrowing money for an apartment building, you don't usually have to give a personal guarantee. So that's one thing. You know what? There's so much more similarities than there are differences. You guys have a program called, I think Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, something like that. It's that we have a program similar called CMHC, so Canada Mortgage and Housing Insurance. And it's what allows us to get like as high as 85% financing on our buildings. Right now, we're getting 85% financing on our buildings, less than 2% interest over a five-year term. And we generally can go 5 or 10 year terms on our mortgages where you guys have 30, 35-year amortization. So those are some of the basic differences. Other than that, it's pretty much the same. They're analyzed the same. We do a lot of BRR strategies on our buildings, you know, renovate and then, you know, refinance, all that sort of stuff, and then own them long term. A lot of that stuff is the same. So it's just a few different nuances like that.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
No, I appreciate you breaking that down because I was just kind of wondering some of the differences. But I mean, you know, some of those can be consequential, but at the same time, you can still make money in real estate like you guys are doing. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool. And so, you know, what advice would you give to someone who's like, I want to do what Anna did. I don't want to have to live within my means.
You know, the first thing people need to do, Suja, is, and I learned this before I got into real estate. When I was a financial advisor, one of the first things that took me to over $300,000 a year income was working with a coach. And the first time I hired a coach, I remember we'd been bought out by a larger company and they sent us to a convention in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they surrounded us with all the big producers of the company, right? And like we're talking, these guys are making $1 million a year plus. And at one point, a coach was talking on stage and he said, how many people in the audience have hired a coach? And I looked around and every single one of the top producers' hands was up.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, doing that. Before I left the convention that weekend, I hired my first coach. That was in 1999. I have never been without one since, because every single one, and the coaches I look for are not cheerleader coaches or the coaches who, I'd probably be considered more of a mentor than a coach, because I've been there, done that. I don't want a coach who is like my cheerleader and, you know, different stuff like that. I learned from somebody who's been there, done that. That's kind of coach I want.
Yeah.
And so those are always the coaches I've hired. And, you know, in moving that forward over the years, it changes because my goals change all the time. And even with our very first course that we got with Robert Kiyosaki, we spent the extra so that we would have a one-on-one coach. Mm-hmm. And again, catalyst, because shortly after we got started, within like about 6 months, that's where we met our very first business partners through an event that my coach put on. It was just a dinner. She just had brought a bunch of her students together, past, present students. And we met our partner that had started the course 2 years prior to us. And they had like 20 houses. And it was like, our partnering with them took so much of our fear away because they'd already done it. And I remember walking through houses with them and going, ooh, this is a very nice house. And they go, Edna, you're not going to live here. He says, this is the kind of stuff tenants live in. And they go, okay. You know, so I had to learn some mindset shifts at that point, right?
Yeah.
And even my kids, I remember taking them with us to look at houses, and they're going, they were used to looking with us because we had moved into a pretty nice house, and they were used to looking at some higher level houses. And when they walked in, they go, "Oh, we don't like this house." You know, so it was kind of funny. But that partner that we met through our coach was one of our biggest catalysts for changes. And even now, I always tell my students, you know, because we do group calls, that person sitting on that Zoom call beside you could be your next partner. One of our partners that we met at the very first three-day weekend we took, we ended up buying 270 doors with, you know? So it's the network is huge. And a lot of times your coach is connecting you with that network too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a really important point. And, you know, for anyone who's trying to get to the next level in life, it can really be an amazing catalyst. And sometimes finding that right coach is also, you know, takes a little bit of a couple tries or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. Like I've had lots of people say, well, you know, I've tried this before. I've tried working with a coach and, you know, but lots of times people don't have any idea what it means.
Yeah.
They still have to do the work.
Yeah.
They still have to do the work. You can short. And I think a lot of times people think, well, if they hire a coach, everything's done for you. No, you still have to do the work. And sometimes I think people go in with some blinders on and then they realize, the ones that succeed realize that they still have to do the work, and the ones that drop off are the ones that go, that's too hard. Let's go find something easier.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Yeah. And I mean, I think sometimes being aware of like the coaching process, and like, I feel like when you're first starting out and trying to figure out what it is that you're going to do at all, then it can be, anyways, it's just a tougher part. But I think like once you get through that and then also start to use a coach to really rocket yourself forward, I mean, it can be valuable at so many different points. So I definitely feel like even if it wasn't exactly the right fit when I had a coach, that every single time I did have a coach, it always at least forced me to ask some really tough questions of myself, and has definitely, you know, been instrumental at every single point. So yeah, totally agree. It's a big investment. And so, you know, or it can be a big investment depending on which level you choose, but.
And you know, I have one other comment on that too, Sujra.
Yeah.
I believe if you don't make a big investment, it's a waste of your time, because I've seen people buy $100 courses here that had a ton of value, $50, you know, and they don't even show up. It's like, they call that shelf help, right? Buy it, put it on my shelf, something will happen.
Oh, totally.
Doesn't happen. Even the stuff that's $100, you still have to do the work. And that's, I think, where a lot of people, you know, if they're willing to step up and go, you know what? I am pretty good, but I want to be way better. And I'm willing to spend the money on myself to get better. I still spend the money on myself to get better,
because
there's always people out there that's doing way better than me that I can learn from. And right now I've got four coaches, and one of my coaches actually gave me a.
I love it. What do you have coaches for? What four coaches?
Well, right now, and I was going to show you a sheet, but it's like, people who earn less than $100,000 a year, zero coaches. People who earn $100,000 to $250,000 a year probably have one coach. People who earn $250,000 to $500,000 probably have two coaches. $500,000 to $1,000,000, three, four coaches, and then over $1,000,000, five coaches. So, or above, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and the more people that I meet at that level, it is absolute truth to that.
Wow.
And one of my coaches pointed out that stat just from people that he'd worked with over the years. But you know, I've had a personal trainer coach for years and years, because I'm kind of lazy. And yet I realize how important it is to get my workouts in every week. So I hire a trainer, I go to her gym, and I work out two days a week with weights and stuff. So that's one. I've had her for years and years and years. I trade them off every once in a while, but that's one. I'm right now working with a sales trainer coach, also working with a mindset coach. I just got my certification to become a manifestation coach, and I'm still working with that guy for another year. And I have coaches that help me even work with my staff. So just to give you an example, I get a lot of my business through running YouTube ads. I had to hire a coach who taught, and not me, because it's like, that's like, nails on a chalkboard trying to teach me how to do technical stuff, but my assistant. So I signed up. I get some business coaching with them, one-on-one, different stuff like that, hot seat coaching. But the majority of the coaching stuff he does with my assistant. And I paid a certain amount up front to get started. And I pay an ongoing monthly fee for them to support my assistant.
Wow.
And you know, so always, like, I don't even know when I count out, because a lot of these programs that I buy has a coaching component too, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm the one being coached. Sometimes it's my staff. So probably 7 right now, people that are working with either me or my staff members, and then also a spiritual coach, because I'm again always working on next level, new devil.
I love it. I never heard that before.
And really starting to understand, like, the power of the universe and how I have that connection with the universe. And, you know, every goal I set, you know, it's meant to deliver my goal by the connection you have with the universe. So there's all kinds of stuff. I'm always learning. I love that whole process.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's really interesting. And I hadn't heard that stat before, like the 1 coach, 2 coach, 3, and like the income levels and stuff. And I think that's, you know, that's really interesting.
It is. And you know, you watch over the years, as you hit those levels, you'll start to see, because I pointed it out to other people that I've been working with, and they went, you know what, that even works with me. And I go, yeah, I know, it works with me too. Like, just looking at before, even my very first coach, you had to be earning $100,000 a year before he would work with you. Had to. So that was my first coach. So I worked with him at $100,000 a year till I got to about 300. And then that's when I added on the second one. And I've always had a personal trainer, so maybe I kind of always had two, and it just kept moving at those levels, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, I think that's fascinating and really appreciate you going into that. And okay, so now let's turn it over to you. So you're a coach. What kind of coach are you? And will you share with the audience and anything else you want to share?
Sure. So I consider myself a real estate entrepreneur coach, first and foremost, because I teach and train people how to get into multifamily properties and how to work with investor capital. Those are my two main gigs. Now, the third thing, and I've really added this in a lot over the last few years, is the mindset part of it, because I've realized that the students of mine that were excelling and doing really, really good, they had a mutual interest with me with studying mindset, the spirituality side, the whole understanding yourself, because I think you got to understand yourself so that you can create a life you love, not create a life you hate, and all that sort of thing. So now there's a really big component of my course, even though it's real estate related, a good part of it is mindset related, because I believe that 95% of our success happens to between our ears before we ever even, probably before you sign up for my course. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people just can't even see that. You know, they think, oh, a 12 or 14 or 18 unit apartment building, just like I first thought. I thought that's way out of my reach. I have to own a whole bunch of houses. Well, I've taken 19, 20-year-old kids to 72 doors within 2 years of working with me. And they still lived at home. They didn't even own their own personal property. You know, so it can happen right from the start, but you have to have enough belief in yourself that you'll spend the money to make the coaching and the training work for you.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Well, I really like how you broke that down, and, you know, the part about understanding yourself, you know, I mean, and having like that spiritual connection. I think that'll resonate with a lot of people, because, you know, well, you know, the world of coaching is changing. It's expanding. It's you're able to find someone who can really resonate with you. So thank you so much, Edna, for coming on and sharing a lot of your wisdom and
my absolute pleasure
story with us. Yeah, really appreciate it. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks so much for having me, Suja.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.